All around the mulberry bush, the monkey chased the weasel. Sounds like the Democratic Party. Whoops, there they come now. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Well, good to be back with you and glad to see you're not going to disappoint the public on keeping me guessing on how you're going to open the show.
No, absolutely not. I always love to get a reaction from my co-host in the midst of opening the show. It's a lot of fun. It's very fulfilling, you know. It's a good thing. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are taping this program on the eve of the 2016 Democratic presidential nomination debate. Yes, it is 2015 still.
That's right, folks.
We did not have a time machine. We didn't move forward in time and then are playing this in absentia.
Oh, if only we did.
Only we did. And we could, then we could really clean up in Vegas, I suppose. But tonight, we're taping this on Tuesday. You guys are hearing it on Saturday. So some of you have already watched and obviously have heard some of the spin coming out of the very first Democratic presidential debate. Yes, it's time for the Democratic Party, after the Republican Party has now had not one, but two debates already scheduled, with, I believe, a third one coming up soon, to really kind of get their game on and figure out who their nominee might be, or who, at least by the basis of the polling, is going to be edging ahead between now and when the primary season actually starts. At the beginning of 2016, I believe that the earliest primary states are obviously
New Hampshire
and Iowa.
And that's January. Iowa's a caucus.
Iowa's a caucus, and that's in February, I believe. So
I think it's earlier. It's in December.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll double check on that because I can't remember when the Iowa caucuses are.
Iowa are always they're the first, but they're caucuses. Now this year, the straw poll that they normally do, which I think is in December. Maybe they do the straw poll and then the caucuses later.
Well, no, they have dropped the straw poll.
They've dropped the straw poll.
Iowa has completely dropped the straw poll. They have gotten rid of probably one of the most time-honored political institutions in the country, which was the Iowa straw poll, because I think they were tired of finding out what was having so much hoopla around that particular issue, and so they just decided to go straight to the caucuses and to figure out when that was going to be. So
you want
to
know the truth about why they dropped the straw poll? Because everybody that the GOP establishment wanted was running in the last third. They did not want to hand it over to somebody like Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, Rand Paul. Rand Paul has a kind of a history of running away with the Iowa straw poll. Conservatives tend to have a way of winning the Iowa straw poll. And the Iowa Republican Party said, well, we're just going to do away with it since it doesn't look like any of our guys are actually are actually going to come out front.
I was right.
February.
February 1st is going to be the Iowa caucus.
See, the caucus.
I thought I knew that was the case, but you're right. The straw poll would have been much earlier.
In December, yeah.
Yeah, it would have been in December, but they've dropped it. So now we have the Iowa caucuses. But the point is that by the time we get to Iowa and New Hampshire, and when the real polling starts taking place, when votes start getting counted, the Republican nominees will have had at least three, if not four or five, debates.
Right.
It looks to me, based upon the way the Democratic Party has been structured, that it's probably going to end up with only maybe one that's actually finished. Supposedly, they were supposed to have one, two, three debates before calendar year 2016, and then at least one debate in January, and one debate in February, one debate in March. So they've got a schedule for six debates. They do already have these picked out, so that'll probably happen because at least for the first two, you have television news coverage. ABC News is sponsoring the one in December in New Hampshire, but you know, it's going to be interesting to find out because right now, Chuck, and you and I don't have any foreknowledge of this because it hasn't happened yet, so our listeners can find out how good of prognosticators we are today. We thought we would kind of walk you through, at least on the eve of this debate, the presumptive headliners for the Democratic Party. Now, we know right now, and when we look at our lovely list of all of the Democratic presidential candidates that are out there and have announced, we're looking at dozens. There are at least 15 to 20 people who have announced, declared, or are playing around the margins at maybe declaring that they're in for the Democratic nomination for president. We know some of the key players, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, we know full well because their names seem to pop up all the time. Some of the not declared yet, but their likelies include Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts and Joe Biden, the vice president. But the other declared, who I believe will be on stage tonight, include Martin O'Malley, who is the former governor of Maryland, Jim Webb, the former senator from Virginia, and Lincoln Chafee, who is the former senator from the state of Rhode Island. Now, there are a lot more people involved in this than that.
Way more.
But they, I will tell you right now, folks, there will not be a stage and a B stage, the junior delegates and the senior delegates. This isn't going to happen this way in the Democratic debate. There'll be five people on that stage at the most, and those will be those who actually are doing above a certain percentage in polling. And that, of course, is the five that we mentioned, the Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley, Jim Webb, and Lincoln Chafee. But we are going to do, just like we did for the Republicans before their debates, and yes, we did it a little bit earlier than this, instead of the eve of.
Well, remember, this is 2 months after the Republicans started.
After the Republicans have started. So they're finally getting around to it. So we thought we'd do you the public service today, and probably next week as well, ladies and gentlemen, of talking about the Democratic contenders, just like we did with all the 33, then 34, then 32 Republican contenders. As you know, Rick Perry and Scott Walker have now dropped out of that race, and Jim Gilmore did get into that race that we had announced, although why he's in there, I forgot. Nobody knows.
Yeah, nobody knows.
So today we are going to take a walk for your edification down the list of today will be the main stage Democratic contenders who are vying for votes. Now, are they vying for your vote? Well, as a Christian conservative constitutionalist, most likely not. Although, hold the phone, because you might end up being surprised before it's all over with. But they're really looking to try to figure out and shore up their base. And, of course, with the Democratic environment that it is right now, with the field that's out there right now, Chuck, that we know, at least in the on the main stage, this is an interesting exercise for each of them to try to shore up a base. Because let's just be quite honest, as much as Republicans believe that the Democratic base is a uniform monolith, it's probably more fractured than the Republican base.
Oh, absolutely.
The only thing that they deal with is that they know how to play power politics, and so each of those groups know how to threaten and intimidate candidates in order to getting promises out of them to get what they want. Because they will inflict political pain upon the person if they get into office and don't meet the demands of the special interest groups who help get them there.
Yeah, the difference between Democratic and Republican candidates and inflicting pain is the same activists who inflict pain on the Democrats are constantly inflicting pain on the Republicans all the time. It's never stopped. So it's sort of one of those things where the Republicans, I don't want to get too boo-hoo-y about the Republicans, but the fact is that they've got an uphill climb because no one in the media, except essentially Republican-based talk radio, is pro-Republican. If you read a newspaper...
And I try to stay away from that as much as possible. It's not good for my health.
If you read a newspaper, if you watch television news of any description, if you listen on the radio to the news of any description, the fact is the deck is stacked against Republicans.
And that's okay.
That's fine.
If actually, the vast majority of Republicans actually stood for what they said they'd stand for, I'd be more than happy to go to bat for them when the deck gets stacked
against. Well, I think that came up last week when we talked about the fact that there was a Democratic operative who was crying in his beer because John Boehner had been forced out of his job. And the bottom line was, if you read the article, well, he's got this problem and that problem, but he was one of those people who was speaking sense to the Republican Party. In other words, when a Democrat operative says you're speaking sense to the Republican Party, what that translated means is that you're preaching Democratic principles to the Republican Party, and when you're the Speaker of the House of Representatives, you're enforcing Democratic principles on the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
And that's what they liked about John Boehner. He would do business with them And especially when he couldn't get his own caucus to do it, he'd just go across the aisle and get them to do it.
That's right. But John Boehner is not a declared candidate for the Democratic Party presidential nomination. So let's roll back over and focus on these folks. Here's the situation. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to post this up on our website, but we are drawing a lot of this backgrounding that we're going to have fun with today from a website that's 2016.democratic-candidates.org. It's the same website which we drew from all the declared Republican candidates and gave you some little blurbs about what they said about them too and filled in some of the gaps. And I want to start, well, right from the very top, Charles. I want to start with Hillary Rodham Clinton. Declared 2016 Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Rodham Clinton, the former United States Secretary of State, the former U.S. Senator, and former First Lady. Hillary Clinton was born October 26, 1947, which means she will be 68 years old when and if she receives the Democratic nomination and runs for president of the United States. I'd like to have the latitude to just read the first paragraph from this website because I think it really sets a tone, Charles. And this is from 2016.democratic-candidates.org. They're opening on giving you a bio and a background on Hillary Clinton. Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton is a woman who needs no lengthy introduction. Originally from Chicago, Illinois, she attended Wellesley College for a degree in political science, then went on to Yale Law School. It was during her schooling at Yale that she met her now current husband and then future president of the U.S., Bill Clinton. Although she was raised Republican and held to a right-wing political ideology for most of her academic career, she would ultimately change her views, and today has amassed an impressive resume of political accomplishments as a decidedly leftist liberal Democrat. This history, which includes her passive roles as First Lady of Arkansas and then of the United States, as well as active positions such as her two terms as a senator for the state of New York and 4 years as U.S. Secretary of State under President Obama, has led her to the present when, now a declared candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2016, she is easily the favorite in her party. All right, Chuck, I wanted to read this completely because I'm sure that the vast majority of our listeners didn't know about three different things in here. Number one, they didn't know that she was raised Republican. Number two, I'm pretty sure that they didn't have any clue that she held to a quote-unquote right-wing political ideology for most of her academic career at Wellesley. And number three, I am almost positive without doubt that the vast majority of folks didn't realize that she is easily the favorite in her party.
I'll be quite honest. The writer of this Hey Geography seems to have spent a little bit of time in fantasy land.
Well, and it's okay because it's probably written by a Hillary Clinton staffer.
The fact that you are a Republican hardly automatically makes you a right-wing ideologue.
True.
Didn't we just talk about John Boehner? How about Jeb Bush? How about Nelson Rockefeller? How about Charles Evans Hughes going back that far? You can name progressives in there. How about President Theodore Roosevelt? If you want to name progressives that go back to the early days of the Republican Party, yes, indeed, right-wing and Republican aren't necessarily a puzzle piece fit.
Well, I want to know, did Hillary Clinton write an essay or a thesis as part of her Wellesley education about the beauties of the free market and the glory of capitalism?
Yeah.
Did she write about the glorious idea of motherhood and why it's sacrosanct and we should honor women who carry children to term?
Full term, yeah.
Or did she write about the idea that it is a fundamental right to keep and bear arms for your self-protection and that of your loved ones and for us to be able to have a strong national defense?
Or how about it's the right of local school districts to determine if whether or not the Bible is read and prayer is engaged in a public school?
I bet if we went back to Wellesley College's archives and Googled up Hillary Diane Rodham, we would most likely find all of those type of things because I'm sure that along with the fantasy of saying that she was a right-wing ideologue when she was in college probably meant that she didn't fully embrace state socialism at the time.
Bingo.
That's probably what it was.
Her parents were Republicans. Now, what that means, again,
Well, they grew up. She grew up in Chicago, Illinois. So the Chicago, Illinois Republicans of the 50s and 60s would have been along the lines of Nelson Rockefeller.
Exactly. They would have been liberal. Trying to think, Charles Percy. That's the Wayback Machine right there. Senator Charles Percy, who was a Republican from Illinois, mm-hmm. was hardly what you would call a right-wing conservative. So my guess is the parents were probably Percy supporters and that kind of thing. This I find very interesting because Hillary claims to have been for Goldwater in the 1964 election. Honestly, that was a position that if you were a Republican and active in Republican politics, you had no choice but to support Goldwater in 64 because he was the nominee.
Well, that's true. That's true. Now, I think there's... I missed it, Chuck. I undercounted because I believe that there's probably one other piece in this opening paragraph of this hagiography that people would have never believed or didn't know. And that is the point that says the history, which includes her passive roles as First Lady of Arkansas and then of the United States.
I noticed that as well, and I'm glad you brought that up.
Because if I remember correctly, the year was 1993. Bill Clinton had just become president of the United States, and we were debating an issue called Hillary Care.
Hillary Care, yeah.
How passive of a role is that, Chuck?
Well, if you recall, he put her in charge of getting that passed.
Yes, he did. Absolutely.
That's why it was called Hillary Care. She was anything but passive in that.
Oh, absolutely. She was an adjunct of his policymaking as president. Yes, I know, under the Constitution, the executive doesn't make law. You notice I said policymaking because right. What they want to do is make policies that basically circumvented the laws. I read the EPA, you name it.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So I think this is kind of funny because, you know, right now, I'm sure that the vast majority of our listeners, anytime they hear anything about Hillary Clinton, they're really hearing it only from a handful of sources. They're probably hearing it from, well, maybe Rush Limbaugh and the talk radio conservatives. They may be reading Fox News. I'm guessing they're not getting it from Huffington Post or from Instapundit or any of the other leftist blogs and leftist talkers. Yeah. Rachel Maddow is not their daily listening.
Daily Cause.
Daily Cause, yeah, that's right. So we like to nick this up a little bit because we understand that the website that we're looking at here has a decidedly leftist bent to it.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's perfectly fine. You know, we just like having fun with it. So basically, you've got this whole idea, but they really kind of dig into this. And they say that basically that, you know, Clinton is well known. Well, I'll give him that.
Yeah.
And generally liked among a large percentage of the American citizenry. I don't think they've been looking at poll numbers lately because hers are not great and they're dropping. And it says, with a serious chance of becoming the first female president in the nation's history, they do have, that is a potential.
It's a possible.
It's
a strong possibility.
Especially if the Republicans keep doing what they're doing right now. And basically says her intense preoccupation with always presenting herself favorably to the public, and perhaps more cynically, her skill at playing the game of politics, has sometimes led her to bouts of questionable sincerity.
Well,
we might as well have just interspersed the word Benghazi into that.
Well, partly, yeah. And also this thing about escorting journalists who are asking tough questions out of the room during press conferences. This is a scary thing with her. She wants to be in complete control of the information stream, period.
Oh, absolutely. Well, yes, and that's the whole server issue, which we're now finding is taking on a life of its own.
Oh, gosh.
As things that she said she submitted never got submitted. Things that she said she never did are showing up in the email servers. And now we're finding out it wasn't just one tech company out in Colorado that had access to her servers, but now a second tech company in New York is starting to get inquiries from the Justice Department as to what they didn't wipe off of Hillary's email server.
I read a story today that I haven't been able to vet all the way through yet. But it basically said that her remote control settings, and if you know anything about email and that kind of thing, you can set your remote control settings so that you can get in there by remote and do all kinds of doctoring and editing and just administrative things. And remember, she was doing State Department business on this stuff. Mm-hmm. All those gates were wide open. And the fact is that a lot of these emails that were thought to be gone forever are showing up because they were backed up to the cloud.
Oh, there we go.
Okay,
good.
Well, folks, I can guarantee you that the secure State Department servers are not backed up to the cloud. And if you want me to explain the cloud, I can do it in, I'm not going to do it, but I can do it in not very much detail. I understand it. It's a remote server under someone else's control. That's not what you want with confidential, top secret, name all the classes of emails that go to the Secretary of State from ambassadors, staff, name something else that should be absolutely only handled in a super secure server. She didn't do that.
She did not do that. You're right. She absolutely refused to do that, as a matter of fact. But, you know, Hillary has a lot of baggage, Charles, both on the Republican and the Democratic side. The Republicans love to bring up things like Whitewater to Vince Foster to Travelgate. You name the issue, Hillary has, including now Benghazi and email servers. The one thing that you can count on with Hillary Rodham Clinton is that there will be controversy surrounding this woman. There was controversy surrounding her when she was an intern on Capitol Hill during the Watergate hearings, when it come to find out that she all but committed fraud as a researcher for the committee right. chairs investigating Richard Nixon in order to try to hang other things upon the president. You know, I think it's kind of interesting how they put it that she has, maybe more cynically, she knows how to play the game of politics. Oh, yes, Hillary Clinton is definitely a player. There's no doubt about that. But oftentimes when you have people who like to play games without rules that they have to follow, what usually happens is chaos and the end of the game sooner rather than later.
Right.
I think Hillary may be coming toward the end of her game.
It's entirely possible, Barry. Camille Paglia, who's sort of a writer, essayist, she does all kinds of things. Camille, and she's a liberal. She's a liberal woman. And actually, if you've heard her interview style live is a little off-putting. But when you read what she says, she's a very common sense kind of ultra-liberal. She gets along with a lot of people on the right side of the aisle because she is a common sense liberal. I mean, she doesn't pull punches with her views, but she also is willing to concede when Republicans have a good point or conservatives. Now, Camille Paglia has come out and said that basically Hillary will not make it to the primary. And she won't make it to the primaries because of all the Benghazi, the email scandals, numerous others, basically using the Clinton Foundation as a way to squeeze donations for the foundation so they can take huge salaries out of the foundation, that kind of thing. And the fact is, if some of the things that Hillary has done and that nobody disputes that she has done, had a Republican done that, they would have been drummed out of politics, and we'd be lucky if they didn't serve jail time. But the fact is, because it's Hillary Clinton, in many ways, the media are essentially willing to give her a pass. And people on the left side of the aisle in Congress are ready to go to bat for her. One of the things, Barry, that should be noted, you talked about the number of debates that are coming up. Well, originally, all the other candidates wanted a minimum of 6.
Right.
And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's the chairman of the Democratic National Committee, has A, rigged the game so that Hillary can pick and choose who she's going to debate, when she's going to debate them, and how many debates there are going to be in order so that she will remain the front runner, has been very blatant about the fact that that's exactly what she's doing. Now, she'll deny it, but the fact is that Debbie Wasserman Schultz has been more than happy to fall on her sword way more than once. And if you paid any attention to the things that she said when called out on the carpet for these things, she'll say anything, anything, to keep Hillary from any kind of damage. And this is kind of the attitude on the left side of the aisle in both houses of Congress, in the bureaucracy, wherever, and from the White House. These guys will say anything, use any logical fallacy they can come up with to protect Hillary.
Oh, absolutely. And it goes so far as, you know, if you start looking at some of the breakdowns, like the debate is co-sponsored by Facebook and CNN. But CNN, if you go over to their website down their politics section, they're doing everything they can to, shall we say, try to be as neutral as possible to the candidates while still backing Hillary Clinton to the teeth.
Okay, Barry, but you're aware that CNN is so worried about ratings
Oh, absolutely.
On this mess.
Yeah.
They've already cut the debate by an hour.
Well, yeah, I can see that.
And Donald Trump might be right, because Trump came out and said, well, nobody's going to watch it because I won't be there.
You know, he may have a good point.
He might
there,
have a point.
As a matter of fact, he may have a very good point at that point.
CNN is so desperate to get people to watch that they're soliciting debate questions from celebrities.
Oh, well, that ought to be fun. Now, are they going to be soliciting from Christina Aguilera, who just held a major fundraiser for one Hillary Rodham Clinton?
Oh, that wouldn't be a big shock to me.
Will they be reaching out to deep thinkers like Ashton Kutcher and Demi Moore? And I mean, we can go down the list of...
Breitbart has a partial list.
Oh, my goodness. Here we go.
Katy Perry.
Oh!
Elton John. Margaret Cho. If you know who Margaret Cho is. If you don't bother.
Yeah, it's
not if you do, it shouldn't come as a shock. And the questions are all related to LGBT rights, HIV, AIDS, and abortion, Planned Parenthood, while other celebs express concerns about medical marijuana, jobs for the middle class, and gun control. Actually, they have some. Ashton Kutcher,
there you go.
Demi Lovato, if you don't know who that is. That's one of the Disney girls who's gone wrong. Shonda Rhimes, Elton John.
Wait, excuse me. I'm sorry. Elton John is a British citizen.
He's not a citizen, right?
He's not a United States citizen. Well, as a matter of fact, it's hard to tell how many of these people are actually United States citizens.
All right.
But
Juliana
anyhow.
Margulies, Melissa Etheridge, Martha Plimpton. It's the usual gang that you can expect ultra-left questions and expecting ultra-left answers.
Well, I think this is fun because we're going to continue on talking about the other four major contenders in this debate, but let's talk about a few of these questions. Because you know what? I think that they really want our listeners need to understand how deeply Hollywood cares for them. Okay? So here's Katy Perry, pop rock phenomenon. I don't even know if you call it rock or not anymore. But she's a singer of questionable...
After a fashion.
Of questionable heritage. And her question is, with the GOP crusade to defund Planned Parenthood momentarily deflated, how do you intend to consistently protect American women seeking the legal, affordable health care that they so desperately require? Excuse me. What's Katy Perry actually saying? Oh, abortion is health care. Since when?
Well, since the president of Planned Parenthood went to Congress and testified to the fact that abortion was health care.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, it's health care. It's not much health care involved for the baby. But, too bad.
Now, here's one. I'm starting to wonder if maybe I was a little too hard on Ashton Kutcher, because it's obvious that he's already lined up with somebody in one of the Democratic camps, because this question actually shows some presence. He says, during your presidency, you will be faced with a robotic revolution. For example, driverless cars and semi-trucks, as machines take skilled and unskilled jobs from Americans. This will further hollow out the middle class and divide society. What do you propose we do as a nation to bridge the gap without stifling innovation? What will you do as president to maintain a country where everyone has upward mobility?
That's almost a Republican question.
I was just about to say, I wonder if Ashton Kutcher isn't channeling Donald Trump.
No, because if you can hear the echoes of Bernie Sanders in here.
Oh, it's exactly what this is, because Bernie Sanders, one of his, and we'll talk about Bernie in just a minute, but one of his key driving distinctives is to create a wedge between Hillary Clinton and the middle class Democratic voters.
Exactly.
And this is the question. That's the reason why I said I think Kutcher may be already lined up with one of the camps already.
Because
this is what you call a gotcha question.
Exactly.
This is the epitome of a gotcha question.
Well, I recognize this because I use the same tactic when I
close all the escape doors and force them to go down the hallway you want them to go.
You know, the bottom line here is if the real Republican response or the real conservative response, not Republican, and when I say conservative, I mean constitutional conservative, the real is that the government has no business delving into these as policy issues. The only policy issue I can see is driverless trucks and cars should be subject to strong regulation at the state level.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Other than that, it's up to companies to decide who they hire, what they hire them to do, and whether they need skilled or unskilled labor. Okay. If you think you can train a guy up from the garbage that used to be a garbage man to run a nuclear reactor, well, if your state doesn't regulate that, then you should probably be down at the state house asking your representative to have that regulated by the state. But it's an interesting question, and it's obvious that this was a gotcha question.
Yeah. Now I'm reading through some of the rest of these questions here, Chuck, and it's obvious that Eric, some of them are being planted by certain special interest groups too.
Absolutely.
Especially this one that Juliana Margulies, who I guess I can't remember what show was she on.
Was she on ER?
ER. That was
for
the
years.
One.
Now she's on the Good Wife.
Well, who knows? I don't watch television, so I don't know that. But her question, I think, was sent to her to send to them by the Brady campaign. And here's what it says. Next year, the citizens in Nevada will vote on an initiative to require the same Brady background checks that are conducted at licensed gun dealers to be conducted for sales made at gun shows and online. Do you support that initiative? And as president, would you seek to make it federal law? Okay, so gun control or moms against guns or something like that has planted this question with their celebrity spokesperson.
You ever bought a gun at a gun show?
I can't say that I have.
Guess what? You go through the background check.
Oh, there you have it. So
they call it in. They do the instant background check, just like.
Yeah, because most gun shows are dealers.
They are
they're licensed FFLs.
When they talk about the gun show loophole, what they mean is
passive sales among private individuals.
That's exactly it. And they want the same rules for passive sale. They want you, if you sell me a blunderbuss, they want you to have to call it in and get a background check on me in order to sell me a blunderbuss. If you don't know what a blunderbuss is, it's a it's a big gun with a, you know, they load it up with junk. It was sort of like an ancient giant shotgun. And with a big bell-shaped barrel. This is a question from someone who has no idea what goes on at a gun show. Never been to one.
Nope.
Never tried to buy a gun at one.
Nope.
Never been knows absolutely zero anything about federal firearms dealers. Probably never doesn't know one and would cringe at the idea of meeting one in person. My father-in-law was a federal firearms dealer, and he did shows, and he had to have equipment so he could do background checks.
Yes, indeed.
When he sold a weapon at a gun show. So, yeah, they do have to go through a background check.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, now here's the other question, then we're going to go back to the rest of the candidates. This one is from Margaret Cho, and yes, she is of Korean background, and she has come out as an open lesbian. And her question is, how do you allow LGBT couples who are now able to be married under the law? Are they, Chuck?
No.
They're not. That's right. They're under a court order, but not under the law. Full adoption rights in every state. Okay, Charles, she's just hat-tipped the next advance of the LGBT movement is to push for a federal override of state adoption laws. And says, how do we get, quote-unquote, equal rights to family? Okay, Chuck, do you have a right to a family? Is that part of a right that government secures to you?
No.
No. Is that a right that government is supposed to carve out for you?
No. No, that's a right that is in the hands of God.
Exactly. Exactly. So you know, here they're tipping their hat.
Let's put it this way. If the federal government decided, and what she is actually pushing for here is for the federal government to have the power to decide this.
Exactly.
If the federal government decided that family would mean you give birth to a baby, the state takes it and gives it to someone else who would be, quote-unquote, better able to raise a child in the environment that's necessary. In other words, in the environment that better serves the state, then they would be able to do that. This is the right that she's actually advocating for, whether she knows it or not. I don't think she's thought through her position all she knows is she wants to be considered completely equal in sort of self-creating a family.
Right. And of course, who would that impact the most in the United States would be Catholic Social Services.
Absolutely.
Who's probably one of the largest adoption providers in the country. It would also, what would it do for places like pregnancy care centers and things who counsel for adoption if they had to counsel a young lady to have her child adopted by a same-sex couple? Or as the media showed last week, openly homosexual blogger and Hollywood gadfly Perez Hilton taking a shower with his 2-year-old adopted son. Now, he's openly gay. And
yes.
So, folks, this is the kind of equal rights that they're talking about. I'm interested to see how some of these candidates actually do respond to that particular question. I can almost guess for all but one of them. One of them, I think, might throw a wrench into that question.
Possibly.
And we'll talk about him a little bit later. But right now, let's go back to the other candidate. So you got Hillary Clinton there, and we all know her issues from Benghazi on. It's been in the press for a long time. There's probably not going to be too many surprises. I do think there is one thing, though, because the moderator of the debate, one Anderson Cooper from CNN, has promised on a stack of Bibles,
right.
He's pledged not to encourage the candidates to go after each other, saying, quote, "These are all serious people. This is a serious debate," unquote.
Well, okay. What's the implication?
That
the Fox News debate wasn't serious.
And that any bringing up of anybody's record and shading it negatively would be considered beneath them.
That's absurd.
Well, who was the only person in the entire room that night whose past record might actually be really, really problematic for them?
Yeah.
Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Yeah.
Okay. So here is Hillary Rodham Clinton's biggest thorn in the flesh. The man whom nobody thought would be in the position that he is in right now as the front runner in New Hampshire and climbing in the polls in other states, creating a massive wave of excitement among the most hardcore of the liberal Democrats in the United States of America. As a matter of fact, today, Chuck, you and I were behind a car that had a bumper sticker for this candidate.
That's right.
And I've seen them all over the place. I've seen them in the countryside. I've seen them in the cities. I've seen them everywhere. Now, usually it's on somebody driving a fairly, shall we say, a vehicle that you would consider something a liberal would drive, like a Volvo or a Prius or something, or a hybrid or things of that nature. And it usually is around other bumper stickers, like the coexist bumper sticker or the, you know, woman's right bumper stickers or the, you know, keep your hands off my whatever bumper stickers. But it's really becoming quite a phenomenon that this candidate who, may I remind you, is running in the Democrat presidential nomination sweepstakes here as a registered independent.
Well, not even really true.
Oh, well, thank you for telling me that I just lied to everybody.
No, he's actually registered as a Democratic Socialist.
Ah, that's right. But he was always identified.
That's his party affiliation.
In Congress as an independent.
Yeah. Oh, well, there's a reason for that. Tip O'Neill made sure that happened.
Okay.
When Bernie Sanders first got elected to Congress, I think it was Tip O'Neill, it was one of the Democratic speakers of the House, made certain that he would not be listed under his party label, that he would be listed as an independent, because, A, first of all, you can't be anything other than a Democrat or a Republican.
Right.
You can be an independent if you really want to. In fact, Ron Paul ran as an independent.
Yes, he did.
And you know what? He got elected to Congress, reelected for his second round, first as a libertarian.
Yeah, he was a libertarian.
And he was listed as an independent because...
And ran in 1988 on the libertarian ticket for president.
For president.
Yes.
And the reason he had to run as a libertarian was because Newt Gingrich did some fancy maneuvering and got a... Now, get this. Anybody who thinks Newt's a conservative, he got a Democrat to switch seats and basically did what the Republicans do very well, ran two GOPEs and a switch Democrat against Paul in a primary, all with top secret support from Newt. And they ran Paul, and they beat Paul. He came in second, I think, out of the four man field. So he ran as an independent, and as an independent, as a libertarian, and won. He won the seat, much to Newt's chagrin. So this kind of thing does happen. Now, Bernie has always been Bernie started out as the Democratic Socialist mayor of.
Well, we're going to get to that here.
Okay, I'm sorry.
We're going to get to that here because.
Jumping ahead.
I want to talk about Bernie Sanders, who is one of the other nominees and probably one of the two front runners for this nomination for the Democratic Party. Bernie Sanders, the declared 2016 Democratic presidential candidate, is the junior U.S. Senator from Vermont and the former mayor of Burlington, Vermont. That's what you were thinking of.
Yes.
Bernie was born September 8th, 1940, which means that he would be 76 years old if he wins the nomination for the Democrats and runs for the nomination, close to
77 when he takes the oath.
He'd just have turned 76 in September next year.
Okay.
So yeah, so he'll be 77 when he reaches, but if you think about it, he'd be 76 years old. So anyhow, here is the bio from 2016.democratic-candidates.org, the first paragraph. I love reading these. Born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, Bernard Bernie Sanders is the son of Polish Jewish immigrants. While his higher education began with the study of psychology in Brooklyn, he soon transferred to the University of Chicago, where he ultimately graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science. His political activities during his academic career consisted mostly of contributions to the civil rights movement, as he was a student organizer for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee.
Oh, gosh. SNCC.
SNCC, yes.
SNCC, those of us who grew up in the 60s recognize that instantly.
Okay. And please share us, give us a little color on that.
Well, SNCC was essentially alongside fellow travelers with the SDS, Student for Democratic Society.
And, now, the SDS was the breeding ground of people like Abby Hoffman and...
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember who all else.
The list is lengthy. Unfortunately, I did grow up in the 60s, so my memory is Tom Hayden. My memory is starting to fade a little bit. I mean, this is, we're talking 1965, 1967, 68, in that era. But names that you will remember, the Chicago Seven, were a combination of SNCC, SDS, Black Panthers, all involved in the riots at the 1968 Chicago convention, which was what that Chicago 7 trial was all about. The conspiracy, basically, to incite riot and that kind of thing. So, yeah, SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, you couldn't possibly think of a worse name. Sounds really, really cool, peace-loving, blah, blah, blah. Nope, nope, nope. Boy, these guys were around inciting riot, inciting violence all over the place.
Well, that's all right, because Bernie's been doing the same thing in his years in Congress. And they talk about how he started in 71 trying to run and spent 10 years losing. And then he finally broke in 81 and won the race for the mayor of Burlington, Vermont, which kind of kicked off his political career. And then he served there for 8 years, and then he began teaching political science at Harvard. And then in 1991, he came back and won the congressional at-large seat for Vermont, and becoming the first independent, he was registered independent, in over 40 years.
I'll be quite honest.
Although Sanders traditionally runs as an independent and describes himself as a, quote, democratic socialist, unquote, he caucuses with the Democratic Party and generally enjoys their support. Now, I see the reason why Tip O'Neill begged him to say he was file under the independent docket,
right.
when he comes into Congress. Because what kind of a PR nightmare would it have been for the Democratic Party to have caucused with a socialist?
The Democratic Socialist,
right.
Exactly.
Exactly. So that was going to be bad on the Democratic Party. So since he did his work under the independent banner, they were more than happy to embrace him, even though they knew full well that he was a socialist, and he still is. I think that it's very interesting, Chuck, that we seem to have a significant segment of the modern society, as is evidenced by all of these bumper stickers we're seeing all over the place on cars, who seem to either have acquiesced to the idea or want to embrace even further the idea of socialism.
Right.
That the government should be responsible for handing out the goods and determining winners and losers and controlling the economy and making sure that everything is, quote unquote, fair. And that's what Bernie Sanders is campaigning on. He is, when he announced, he has started with numerous rallies in various states, including New Hampshire, Oregon, and other places, that have drawn thousands.
Yeah.
Tens of thousands. Chuck, honestly, if you would ask me right before he filed, if Bernie Sanders had a snowball's chance of actually catching fire, I would have told you there was probably no way possible that the voting public, even among the Democrats, were so gullible that they would get behind an avowed socialist.
I will give you a retrospect. I've thought about this. What's the deal? There is a core of Obama supporters who were absolutely incensed that he did not take office and immediately, essentially, declare himself dictator and do all these things that Sanders is talking about getting done. And why did Obama not do these things, get these things done? Because, believe it or not, there is another segment of society who looks at them and says, we don't want this. And these people basically are a little bit like, let's talk about the people who recently wrote a letter to the attorney general that basically said climate change deniers should be investigated and possibly arrested and prosecuted. This is the kind of attitude that's going on out there. This is the kind of person who loves somebody like Bernie Sanders. And by the way, that bumper sticker, do you remember what it said? Feel the burn.
Feel the burn. Yeah, that's
feel the burn. B-E-R-N. Feel the burn.
with a little shock of hair.
The glasses
on it. So it's interesting because on this website, they also give some of the positions on various issues of the candidates. And of course, Bernie Sanders, being an avowed socialist and a hardcore liberal, is 100% pro-abortion, obviously. And he's interesting because he's completely against the death penalty. I guess if you're alive and commit a crime, you shouldn't be killed by the state. But if you're unborn and have judicially innocent of any crimes, then the state should actually fund your execution. That's the inconsistency of a liberal.
Oh, it's an extreme inconsistency. I always laugh about when somebody says, "Well, you're all for the death penalty," and I'm like, "Yes, I am, but not for the judicially innocent." I said, that's the difference between your you believe in the in the rape and incest exceptions. That argument always bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you want to give one of the victims the death penalty? The baby did nothing except be conceived, and we'll have to grow up with the stigma of having been the product of either a rape or an incestuous relationship, willing or unwilling. So the fact is that child should be given every consideration. He has exactly the same right to life and the exact same right to respect and the dignity of his life, regardless of the circumstances of his conception. The idea then that a child molester or some capital criminal shouldn't get it is somehow more worthy of life than a judicially innocent child always amazes me. And I've asked people, I said, so, again, you're for the death penalty for one of the victims. And they go, what do you mean? And I said, the baby.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know what I get more often than not? I never thought about it that way.
And of course, most people don't, because they just take their talking points from the talking heads.
Exactly.
Okay, so looking back, CNN, in their article, talk about the fact that these are the two front-running, leading Democratic contenders, and they are going to probably dominate tonight's debate, basically pushing back at each other on various things that they see as weaknesses in the other. Bernie Sanders hits Hillary Clinton on her Wall Street record and her vote on Iraq, on getting into the Iraq war. And she will hit him on the defensive on his position on guns and his poor standing with minority voters. And I think this is interesting because I honestly believe Hillary's position on guns is almost exactly like Bernie Sanders, but she's going to hit him and make him defensive on gun issues.
Well, it's going to be a nuanced argument. We're going to talk about, you know, as long as you want to keep your single shot muzzle loader.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, pistol and
go out and kill a turkey, then you're
and
okay.
Kill turkeys. You're fine. And the first thing I always say to people to bring that one up is the Second Amendment has nothing to do with hunting.
That's right. It doesn't. That's right. So, you know, you've got this whole issue, but even CNN points out and points out, I think, honestly, which is surprising for CNN,
yes.
says that until now, they each have had good reason for avoiding full contact with the other. Clinton hasn't wanted to elevate Sanders and his surprisingly strong poll numbers, while Sanders has wanted to maintain his untraditional above-the-fray image. In other words...
That's not going
to
work.
No, and that's going to be what... They're going to try to change this out and trying to fight with each other tonight. And basically, he is going... Bernie Sanders has already said publicly he's going to go after Hillary Clinton for being a hawk. For being pro-military, pro-interventionist, pro-expansionist. Honestly, he may be onto something there.
Yes.
Because this was the same general feel that got Barack Obama elected.
Yes.
Twice.
Yeah.
Is that whole pushback until they realized that Barack Obama was just continuing to carry on basically 80% of the Bush doctrine in relation to involvement in the Middle East, and then liberals started really becoming critical of Barack Obama. Bernie yeah. Sanders is on to a key pressure point on Hillary Clinton right here. Yes, she did vote to authorize engagement in Iraq. She voted for a number of things, but that is where she is. He's going to come at her. He's going to say that she is a military hawk. And that is not in keeping with the Democratic tradition.
Well, yeah, one of the problems that she has is Barack Obama's idea was basically to go in and support the most radical sides in upheavals in the Middle East, and she, as his Secretary of State, implemented that program.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And when she was a senator from New York, voted in 2002 to allow it to go, allow it to happen under the Bush administration. Now, he notes that he voted against authorizing the Iraq war, and he said at the time he argued that the conflict would destabilize the Middle East, kill large numbers of Americans and Iraqi civilians, and hamper the war on terror against Al-Qaeda. Well, I'd say he pretty much knew his foreign policy.
I was going to say that really wasn't a hard prediction to make.
No, not really. But it was very few in the Democratic Party that was doing that.
Oh, oops.
Okay, well, we're going to need to move on and talk about the other three contenders a little bit. And those other three contenders are, in order, we're going to talk first about Martin O'Malley. Martin O'Malley is the former governor of the state of Maryland. Now, O'Malley has been making a lot of noise lately because of the problems with getting the debates going in the Democratic Party. He's been very critical of Debbie Wasserman Schultz and this whole structure of how they've been framing and getting prepped for these debates. He was one who really pushed for this. Now, as the former governor of Maryland and declared 2016 Democratic presidential candidate, O'Malley was born in 1963, which will make him... if he wins the nomination and possibly wins the presidential election, he would only be 54 years old to ascend to the presidency. And the way that they present it here on the website, the former frontman of the Irish fusion band, O'Malley's March, who also, incidentally, is the two-term governor of Maryland. See, he ran and won twice in Maryland. Served notice of a run for 2016 after agreeing to a speaking engagement in 2013 in Charleston, South Carolina, only 500 miles and two states south of Annapolis. Nothing unusual about that, right? But he really, this is what Martin O'Malley is going to run on. Says that Maryland's remarkable drop in crime statistics, and that was before this summer, Charles.
Right.
When Baltimore started going into the double digits inside of a month for shootings and murders, their number one national ranking of public schools, their cash reserves of $1 billion, their eighth fastest post-recession national recovery rate, and number one rank for innovation and entrepreneurship are the things that Martin O'Malley is going to tout as his push to become the chief executive really takes, hopefully takes off for him, that he believes, during this debate tonight.
You want to know the truth? This has the smell of the Massachusetts miracle around it.
Yes, it does. It absolutely has that smell.
If you don't know what we're talking about, we're going to run out of time, by the way, so we're not going to get them all in.
Well, we're going to get them. We're going to get these five in. So,
In 88, it was the Michael Dukakis and the Massachusetts miracle, and basically right after he lost the election by a landslide, it became clear that the Massachusetts miracle was a smoke and mirror show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and that's what it's going to be in Maryland, too. Okay, well, moving on, another contender is the former U.S. Senator from Virginia, Jim Webb, who was also declared. He was born in 1946 and will be 70 upon if he wins the nomination next year. Now, Jim Webb's interesting because he started working in the Reagan administration.
Yep.
And he has claimed he was a Republican before he was a Democrat. He believes in bipartisan solutions, and he was the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Reserve Affairs and the Secretary of the Navy. Bet you didn't know that, did you?
I did.
I know you did. But from 2007 to 2013, he served as a senator from Virginia as a Democrat. Now, I have read a couple of... He's also a published author, Chuck.
Yes.
And I have read Born Fighting, which is his book. It's a little rough. You know, he's a little salty as a former military guy. But it's actually a really good read, and other than having some strange positions on certain issues, he is fairly middle of the road, which I think is going to be interesting because if Bernie Sanders attacks Hillary Clinton on being a hawk, will Jim Webb be coming to her defense? Because he is probably the biggest hawk on the stage.
Probably, yeah.
So it's going to be interesting, but he is very, you know, I would say if I were a Democrat, this is who I would be seriously looking at as getting my vote, because you know Webb has been an advocate for the military. He has championed reforms in criminal justice. He has done a number of things, and you can go to the webpage there or his campaign website and check out more of his positions. Now the sad part about it is I don't believe Jim Webb is pro-life. I think he's swallowed the Kool-Aid of the Democratic Party.
That's probably why he switched horses.
Why he switched horses, that's right. And then last, but certainly not least, at least in his own mind, is Lincoln Chafee, who's the former U.S. Senator and governor of Rhode Island. Now, he was born in 1953, which means that if he wins the nomination next year, he would be 63 to assume the nomination. And he basically was brought up at the best of Phillips Academy and Brown University, so very private education. Graduated with a degree in the classics. He originally worked as a professional farrier.
That's just someone who puts horseshoes on.
That's
yeah.
A horseshoer. And then he started in 1985 as a Republican and won the Senate as a Republican and served for 8 years. After that, he left the Republican Party in disgust because they weren't nearly as liberal as he hoped they would be, and decided to head out as an independent. He was elected governor of Rhode Island in 2011, and that was the first person to not have a party affiliation since the 18th century to hold the governorship. And then in 2013, interestingly enough, just a couple of years to let the shock wear off, he switched to the Democratic Party. And now he has jumped in to run for the United States presidency. Now, I'm going to guarantee you, Charles, that of all the people on the stage tonight, Lincoln Chafee probably has the least forward personality of all of them, which means that he will get the least airtime.
Right.
And if he does say something of any substance whatsoever, it will get drowned out in the Bernie and Hillary show. And honestly, I don't believe he's going to set well with Democratic base voters, even as liberal as he is in Rhode Island. I don't believe Lincoln Chafee has any traction whatsoever. And frankly, this debate might show that it's time for him to
go back to shoeing horses.
Look for the exit door and find a horse to shoe.
Okay. We're way out of time. If you want to find out more, go to www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.